I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm sitting here in Studio B across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting here in the arena across from my good friend, Benjamin Alira Sainz.
This is Words on a Wire from the campus of the University of Texas at El Paso, KTEP. Welcome to our show.
Today we have, as our guest, poet, fiction writer, Melinda Palacio, who just came out with a new book, How Fire is a Story Waiting. And she's going to talk about that book and about being a writer and all the crazy stuff involved with being a writer. She'll be doing the Poem of the Week. And the poetic license is from our very own Benjamin Alira Sainz.
And it is on rest. Something that I hope to become an expert on this coming year. Let me switch gears here. Uh-huh. You know what the great thing about being a writer is? And that is that we get to travel a lot.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite cities, of course, is San Francisco and New York.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my favorite cities are San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Seattle, Portland. Of course, none of them holds a candle to El Paso.
Right,
but
right.
But, of course, that's a given. And I've traveled very often to those cities. And it's really interesting when I travel, I write, but I don't write on any kind of computer or laptop. I write, I have a pad, a legal pad, and I write longhand.
Right, right. That's how I write now all the time. It's not a legal pad. It's these little leather-bound journals that I've collected over the years. You know how everybody gives writers leather-bound journals for Christmas and for their birthdays? I've probably got a drawer full of them, but I know they're gifts. And so every morning I open those gifts and I start writing in them. And I find that it's helping my writing a lot. It helped me to be more precise with language and slow down a bit rather than put it on the computer.
You know, I should use some of those because I have a bunch of them too. Also, what people give me a lot
of. They give them to writers.
They give them to writers. You know what they also give to me?
Pens?
Expensive ones, and I promptly lose them.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, you're talking about traveling.
You love Buenos Aires.
Buenos Aires, I go there a lot. Every time I fly into EZE, like the rapper, which is the mm-hmm. international airport, I feel like I'm arriving home. But I also love Paris. I've been to Paris many times before. And I think those are the two cities I tend to visit most internationally, although I do love entering into new cities, into Warsaw, into Havana, Rome, Krakow. I love entering new cities. There's something wonderful about entering a city you've never been into because the only idea you have of it is in your imagination. And so your imagination almost transposes itself over what's in front of you. And it becomes this labyrinth of infinite possibility. You just take this street and take that street. And who knows where you're going to end up? Probably in a plaza somewhere, sitting there feeding the pigeons and writing in a journal that somebody gifted to you that you never used before.
You know where I'm going to go this summer?
Where?
Barcelona.
Barcelona. Oh, I've been there. I love Barcelona.
It has been 30 years since I was last in Barcelona, and I am going this summer, and I want to spend 3 weeks there, and I'm going to write. I'm going to go to visit, but I'm not going to go anywhere else in Spain. I'm just going to be in Barcelona, and I am going to write.
Excellent. You know what I do when I enter a new city? I usually go there for maybe 3 weeks or more. I try not to go for less than 3 weeks because you don't really get to learn much about the city in less than that. I mean, obviously, sometimes you have to go less time than that. But what I do is I rent an apartment in a neighborhood that I think I would enjoy walking through every day. And it's better than a hotel. It's a lot cheaper. And it really kind of gives you a sense of you know, what life is like there. And so I rent a hotel, usually one that has internet access. And I sit by the window and I write or I, you know, go downstairs and take walks. It's awesome. I might be in Paris this summer. Maybe I could stop by in Barcelona and we can share some sangria.
It's just right. Yeah, Barcelona's just right up the street.
Oh, you can take a train there overnight. I've done it before. It's really not that far. I could do it. I could do it. And actually, you can even take an easy jet, one of those cheap European flights for like 40, 50 euros.
Oh, no, but I love the train. So writing and travel feeds our imagination. I think that when we step outside of our own worlds, we become bigger people, better people, and better writers.
I agree. You know how I would put it, how I kind of come to understand it is when you enter new cities, you more easily recognize the wormholes, the images that take you into the imagination and take you into the past and the future. You see these awesome images. But I also think that if you want to hone the ability to find the breaches in the fabric of space, in the fabric of reality, you need to learn how to travel where you live. So in El Paso, when I walk to school every day, I try to notice what's around me and be struck, awed by the beauty of a doorway or a cloud formation or the hills of Juarez.
I have a friend of mine who said, I used to live on a certain street. And I said, oh, that's in the Northeast. And he says, how do you know that? I said, because I know this city. And sometimes what I do is that I get in my truck and I just drive. And I go to a certain part of the city, sometimes the Northeast, sometimes the Lower Valley, sometimes the East Side, sometimes the West Side, and I drive around. I need to know the city that I live in.
Absolutely.
I have an intimate knowledge of this town because I want to have an intimate knowledge of this town.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of people do not know how to travel where they live. They think of travel as leaving the city, but travel is just being in the moment and being there, being available for the beauty of your city as it presents itself to you.
And what a great city we live in, too.
Ahua.
So right here from El Paso, Texas, our radio show comes to you. Words on a Wire. Stay tuned. Melinda Palacio was born and raised in South Central L.A. She now lives in Santa Barbara and New Orleans. She is a 2007 Penn Center USA Emerging Voices Rosenthal Fellow and a 2009 Poetry Alum of the Squaw Valley Community of Writers. Her poetry chapbook, Folsom Lockdown, won the 2009 Sense of Place Award. Her debut novel, Ocotillo Dreams, won the Mariposa Award for Best First Book at the 14th International Latino Book Awards and the 2012 Penn Oakland Josephine Miles Award. She also writes a column for La Bloga. How Fire is a Story Waiting is her first full-length poetry book. Melinda, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question. How did you get into this business of writing to begin with?
I started writing for newspapers and magazines. I was a news assistant at the Arizona Republic with crafty chica Kathy Murillo, and we were in the features department. And at some point, I started writing articles, and then later, when I moved back to Santa Barbara, I started writing poetry and fiction.
You just started doing it?
No, well, I think having a background in literature, I was always interested in reading and writing. But I wrote about books. I wrote about other people's lives. And my mother passed away in 1994. And writing, at that point, I started writing more personal poetry and fiction. It was a way to get out of a very deep depression I was in.
So it was kind of therapy and catharsis for you,
yes,
writing.
Yes, and I believe a lot of people come into writing that way. It was one way to see the world from a different perspective.
Speak about your grandmother and speak about your mother and speak about how the spirituality of the Latina, of the Mexican woman, has influenced your way of seeing.
That's a very important point. The book is dedicated to my grandmother. I grew up in her house. My mother was very young when she had me. She was 19. Mm-hmm. We grew up as sisters, and we did everything together. She was also my best friend. We had a very close relationship. It was so beautiful and powerful that I think I am, as you said, just crowded. My soul is crowded with ancestors And so it's when I go to places, you know, I now realize I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And I recently went to visit my grandmother. We talk on the phone. She lives in Del Rio. We talk on the phone often, and a lot of the inspiration for the poetry and even some stories come out of our conversations. And I call some of my poems found poems because she'll just start saying something. And sometimes she has these familiar stories that she repeats over and over, and I'll write them down, and that'll be my poem.
And you said something very interesting. You said that your life was crowded with ancestors. It's a very interesting way to put that, because it makes it seem like it's not always such a great thing.
Yeah, well, I think the word crowded creeps out because I grew up in a crowded house. My grandmother had 12 children. It was sort of a race to see, well, who's going to get to eat first.
do you think that living, that growing up in such circumstances made you want to find more space for yourself, and that's part of what made you a writer?
Yes, I think, and also this idea, getting back to this idea of crowded, that there's also the competing heritages that I have, because my father's from Panama and my mother's Mexican. And sometimes my Mexican tios would sort of oust me for having been Panamanian. And then when I would go and visit, on the rare occasions when I would visit my Panamanian family, they would say things like, "Se le sale todo lo mexicano."
Right.
It just would make fun of my Mexican accent. And then when I went to visit cousins on the other side of the border in Acuña, they would make fun of my Spanish because they'd say, "Oh, ay que pocha." They would just make fun of my pronunciation because I grew up in Los Angeles.
You were caught between three cultures instead of two, which is what most Chicanos experience.
Well, as I said in one of my poems, so nice to be hated by both sides.
Melinda, let's talk a little bit specifically about How Fire is a Story Waiting, which is your new collection of poems put out by Teatrucha Press, which is the press founded by Luis J. Rodriguez. You have it split up into four sections, and those four sections are fire, air, water, earth, the four elements. Can you tell us what that means to you and to the book in particular?
Yes, the fire section are mostly poems about childhood and growing up and heat. There's physical fire, such as in How Fire is a Story Waiting, the title poem. And then the air section is heavy on my travels to different places. The water section has a lot of poems about water, crossing water. There's a lot of poems about New Orleans. And the earth section is mostly poems about death.
At what point in writing this book did you know you were going to put it in these four sections?
I think the title poem sort of gave me the idea to divide up. And also, when I was looking at the collection as a whole, it seemed very natural to me to have those elements. And it's sort of a gift, in the way that titles come to you, or in the way that once you finish a book, or if you're looking for the name of a character, and it kind of all comes together. And that's how this came together.
When you're writing poems and putting a book together, that process for you, is it very, very difficult, or does it just flow?
The difficult part is sitting down. After I sit down, because I move around a lot and I live in two different places, so once I sit down and start writing, I have a nice flow and things do flow, and I write very quickly. Sometimes I'll be on deadline for La Bloga, and it'll be Thursday, and the hours, are, it's getting later and later, and my post needs to be up by just a little past midnight every other Friday. So sometimes I procrastinate. I wait till the very last minute, and I'm writing it really fast. And I do that because I know I can get it done quickly. I write very quickly once I sit down.
But do you do that with poetry as well as your articles on La Bloga?
Yeah, sometimes when I sit down to write a poem, I want to bring a poem to Sundays when I'm in New Orleans. There's the poetry reading at the Maple Leaf Bar, and there's a featured reader, and last Sunday I was the featured reader, and then there's an open mic, and so I would try to bring a new poem. When I'm in Santa Barbara, I have a group called the Santa Barbara Sunday Poets, and we meet once a month, and so I want to bring in something new for that. And usually when I submit to things, I'm thinking, if there's a poem that sort of gets rejected often, I think, well, maybe it's time to take that one out and write a new one. Mm-hmm. So when I sit down and do it, yeah, it does. And the reason why I'm able to write quickly is because I keep a notebook with me, and I jot down ideas. So I never come to a blank page. I always have something, whether it's a word or a little line that happened or something that I saw. And having that little notebook with just a few scribbles is very important to me, because then it's sort of back to this idea of crowding oneself with images. You're not alone, and you're not coming to things blank or by yourself.
So tell me, Melinda, what are you working on now? What's your next project?
I'm working on a new novel, and I'm always working on new poems and new articles for La Bloga, and Claudia Hernandez is doing a project on revolutionary women, and she asked me to participate, so sometime within the next couple of weeks, I will get an essay to her on being a woman, a revolutionary woman. And my new book is really a project that I knew that I'd always would work on, because it's set in the 60s. It's set during my mom's time. And so it's a road trip that begins in East L.A. in the 60s. So it's been fun to research.
Melinda, every time we have a poet on our show, we always have a poem of the week. So we're going to ask you to end our interview, to end with a poem from your book.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'd like to end with the title poem, because it was published in Border Senses.
Oh, that's our local El Paso journal, started by our friend Amit Ghosh.
Yes. It was the first poem that I had published 6 years ago.
Nice.
And this is How Fire is a Story Waiting. My grandmother caught the flame in her thick hands, curled fingers made nimble by kaleidoscope embers. Fire burns hot and cold if you know where to touch it, she said. I watched the red glow spit and wiggle as it snaked down the thin timber, a striptease born out of the festive sound of a half-filled matchbox, through orange windows framed by obsidian eyes. I saw the child she once was, a little girl who raised herself because her mother had a coughing disease. Blood on her mother's handkerchief didn't stop her from dreaming. Maria Victoria was going to be a singer with her deep cinnamon stick voice. She watched novellas in the kitchen while waiting for dough to rise. Her body, heavy with worry for two families and three lifetimes, she tucked mariachi dreams under her girdle. lullabies escaped on mornings warmed by her songs falling into gas burners turned on high. The flame on a stove was never the same. It had a bad hangover. Didn't remember the many matches lit when its starter broke down. My grandmother rolled paper into a funnel, stole fire from the pilot to light the stubborn burner on the right. Crimson burned blue on the white paper. Its folded edges curled black like lace ruffle on a skirt. The finicky flame can't comment on its magic. The thousands of tortillas and pancakes cooked over the years. How I burned myself roasting a hot dog campfire style. How a melted pencil smudged under my sister's eyelid makes her beautiful. My grandmother noticed the time, almost noon. She needed to make 3 dozen tortillas to feed her family of 13. The show over, she blew the match into a swirl of gray squiggles, snuffed it before it had a chance to burn hot on her finger. Funny how fire is a story waiting.
Thank you, Melinda, for that poem, and thank you for being on our show, Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
I have a few reflections on rest. When I was an adolescent, my father was always annoyed with me because I liked to sleep so much. He would drag me out of bed on weekends with his uniquely bilingual, colorful vocabulary. My father wasn't much of a talker, but he did ask me once why I liked to sleep so much. Being the flippant young wise ass that I was, "Why do I sleep so much, Dad?" "Because I'm so good at it." He wasn't particularly amused by my answer. He said you had to earn your rest. That meant that I was supposed to be working. In his eyes, we were always supposed to be working. I'm grateful to my parents for giving me the work ethic that I have. Work was a value. It was the value. Ever since I was a boy, I have been expected to work. On the farm, my job was to collect the eggs from the chicken coop. I considered myself something of a thief. My brother and I were expected to slop the hogs, hoe the weeds from the cotton fields, and then, when the cotton picking season came along, we were expected to pick cotton. When we no longer lived on the farm, I worked at various jobs, delivering donuts door to door on Saturday from a place called the Donut Den. I sold Cokes at football games. I picked onions one summer, the hardest job I've ever had. I roofed houses another summer. My brother and I painted apartments another summer. And one summer, I worked for a place called Speed Sweep Janitor Service. What does any of this have to do with my topic on rest? Well, everything. Because I was raised to work, I have always appreciated the value of rest. The summer I picked onions, I came home reeking of rancid onions and dirt. I would take a shower and feel the hot water wash away the day's labor. I would eat like a horse, then lie down on my bed with a good book. And lying there, I would feel my body ease into serenity and calmness. And sleep was back then so beautiful and so necessary. All these years later, I have had to relearn the importance of rest. I don't mean just sitting down and watching television. I hadn't had a television in 4 years, and I recently acquired one. I'm thinking now it was a poor investment. I've had the television for a month now, and have watched it a handful of times. But I do sit on my red leather chair in the living room, intending to watch television, and wind up not turning it on. I do sit there, I sit there because I need to rest. Rest not only from my labors and my responsibilities, both personal and professional. I need to rest because there is something in me that just does not turn off. My mind is always churning with ideas, with my emotional turmoils, with my own small problems, with the next sentence in the next book I'm writing, with the problems of my family that I have no power to solve. I need to rest. We all do. So I sit there in my red leather chair and watch my new puppy do the things that puppies do and smile and think to myself, puppies are far more entertaining than anything on television. I let my mind rest. I try to empty it of all worries. I shut my eyes. I breathe. I'll pick up a book of poems, read one, try to experience it without judging it or attempting to analyze it. In the mornings, I'll go to my backyard and sit on the steps and let the sun bathe my face and for a few blessed moments, give no thought to the work ahead of me. I think my father was right. Rest is something you need to earn. But it is also one of the most necessary things in life. And rest isn't about planning vacations, which are often far more work than work. Rest is about setting the body and the mind at ease. Rest is about disciplining the self to let go of work, to let go of all those problems and worries and the unfinished errands on the list that we keep in our heads. Rest is not only something we need, but something we deserve. Sometimes now, I take a walk in the middle of the day while I'm at my office. I walk around the campus and put on a song from my iPhone and I sing along. And that is rest. This morning, I woke up. And I was well rested. I slept. It's still something I'm good at. I hope I'll always be good at it. This is Benjamin Alida Sines for Words on a Wire. We'd like to thank you for listening to another edition of Words on a Wire. We'd like to thank our special guest, Melinda Palacio.
And also, we'd like to thank Ben for that poetic license on rest.
It was a pleasure. And I wish all of you rest.
And join us next week and every week, Sundays at 11:30 a.m. on KTEP. I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Benjamin Alida Sines.
Don't forget, the next book you read
may save your life.
I'm up on the tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tightrope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. And the wire seems to be the only place for me. A comedy of everything.